Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Subscribe to Inclusion Revolution Radio, wherever you get your podcasts.
Underdog Fantasy is the fastest growing fantasy app and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Just jump on UnderdogFantasy.com or download the app, draft your team, and that's it. And if drafts aren't your thing, they also have a pick'em game where you can win 20 times your money in a single night. Use promo code RADIO, and Underdog will double your first deposit when you sign up with up to $100 in bonus cash. Deposit $100, get $100 free. That's promo code RADIO. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Verderam and Mark Carman. It is your midweek edition, Stacking the Box, as we prepare for week two and also take a little peek back at week one. Matt Verderam is here. We're looking at you, Philadelphia. We're looking at you, Dallas, the Niners, the Colts, Minnesota. All sitting with week one losses. Who needs a win the most here, Matt, as we get going in our look ahead to week two?
All those teams need them, but I would almost argue Philly needs it the most, just from a morale standpoint. Like that, you know, it's one thing to lose. Like the Colts loss is really bad. But the Eagles, you're up 17-0 against a bad team. Like Washington, look, defensively, Washington's got some pieces. But that's not a team that you should be losing to if you're a contending football team, especially when you're up 17-0. Like, it's one thing if you lose that game, it's nip and tuck the whole way. Something goes wrong. Okay. It's a divisional game that can happen. But that's rough. And then, frankly, I'd say 1A to that is the Niners. They are in a very tough division, the toughest division. And you're playing the Jets. You lose to the Jets to go 0-2. It's cataclysmic. So I'd say those two teams to me stand out. It's like you need to win these games this week.
So that's the first time that I think cataclysmic made it in the first 90 seconds of the podcast. So I think this is a historic podcast. I very much enjoyed that. I'm with you on the Niners. Like, look, you are – and never easy for any team on the West Coast to travel and play, no, quote-unquote, the early game. So, but the Jets look so damn bad losing to the Bills that I don't – I mean, come on. But San Francisco, I mean, it's a road game, so I guess 7 points is still a lot of points. But that's not, you know, they're not being favored by two touchdowns here. So Vegas is giving the Jets a little bit of a chance here, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's your – look, that basically says on neutral site they think the Niners are like 10 points better. 7 points on the road's a lot. I think the only team that's favored more on the road this week is Kansas City, I believe.
Nine-point favorite.
Yeah, Kansas City is laying an obscene amount of points on the road. We'll get to that game a little bit later. But, you know, look, that's a lot of points on the road. It is. I mean, but ultimately, if you're the Niners, you don't care if you win by seven. You don't care if you win by one. You just have to win. You've got to win the game. And look, I expect that they will, but that's a must win. You cannot go out there and lose to the Jets this weekend if you're San Francisco.
The Eagles thing is interesting to me. Where are you at on Carson Wentz right now? Because it's like, how many times do you have to get kicked in the head before you realize, you know what, I don't want to get kicked in the head anymore. There's an intelligence, self-preservation factor that continues to be missing with Wentz, which is not good for the Eagles and or for Wentz.
Well, I agree with you on everything you said. I do the quarterback rankings here at FanSided every week, every Tuesday, and I started with him being, I believe, at 10th. I dropped him to 16th, and it was the biggest drop I had all week long. He just played awful football. I went back and watched that game, and early on, He's playing pretty solidly. I mean, I believe he started like 11 to 13, couple of touchdowns, and then it just completely fell apart. And for people to say, well, he got all that pressure on him. Yes, he did. He was sacked 8 times, which of course is ridiculous. However, during that 11 of 13, I believe the stretch was, he was sacked 4 times in that stretch. So it wasn't as though he had no pressure and then all of a sudden ramped up and was great. He had pressure the whole game, was fine, then all of a sudden just started throwing picks. And I would argue that in the picks that he threw, he really wasn't under that much duress. He needs to be better if they're going anywhere, because if he doesn't play really well, maybe they make the playoffs. Maybe they're a 9-7 type team, but they're not going anywhere. And by the way, yes, I was right. He was 11 of 13 for 165 and 2 touchdowns to start the game. To finish, 13 of 29, 105 yards, 2 picks, and a lost fumble. It was not pretty.
Get rid of the ball. The sacks, to me, are the bigger problem. He's taking sacks where he's trying to make something happen that he doesn't need to do. It's like he doesn't know his own value. By the way, the Eagles, if you're wondering who they're playing this week, they're playing the Rams. They're at home. They're a one-point favorite. Rams beat Dallas. That was partly on Dallas, and not necessarily all the Rams' credit in winning the football game. It's not an easy game.
No.
But they should win it. How about look at Minnesota and Indy? They're playing each other. The Colts are a 3-point favorite at home.
Yep.
I guess that makes sense. You're calling it a pick.
Underdog Fantasy is the fastest growing fantasy app and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Just jump on underdogfantasy.com or download the app, draft your team, and that's it. And if drafts aren't your thing, they also have a pick 'em game where you can win 20 times your money in a single night. Use promo code RADIO, and Underdog will double your first deposit when you sign up with up to $100 in bonus cash. Deposit $100, get $100 free. That's promo code RADIO. Terms and conditions apply.
Pick'em game, whatever, and sure. Indy's at home, so you give them 3.
Although this year, is it? I guess the Colts do have some fans. But still, like...
Right.
Does it really matter?
I can't believe I just got caught in that, because when I hear other people say, oh, you got to go out the road, like, no, there is no road. There is no home. I just did it. That's embarrassing.
No, but really, it really isn't, though, in the sense some people do think these teams have to go on the road. Everything, all these COVID protocols do matter. I'm very curious as the year goes on. Let's wait like 4 or 5 weeks. But like, how much does it really matter? Because my guess is these teams that are really good, like Baltimore's on the road this week. Kansas City's on the road this week. New Orleans is on the road Monday Night Football. I'm going to go ahead and guess those 3 teams and teams of their ilk are going to roll in these games against inferior teams on the road. It's not going to matter. There's nothing to stop the offense. 70 decibels is nothing. Nobody's going to not be able to hear on the field because of 70 decibels through a loudspeaker. So I'm curious to see how that plays out.
So speaking of the Ravens, they are on the road at Houston and a huge road favorite at 7, which I think we just mentioned a second ago. That's one of the games that I'm really looking forward to this week. I'm also Patriots and Seahawks is interesting to me. Can Cam and company do it on Sunday night? I find that to be pretty fascinating. And, so much Steelers hype here, and the Broncos coming off just a terrible Vic Fangio Monday night extravaganza. Why do teams not hire the clock operator coach? I'll never get it. We say this every single year.
I totally agree with you. Like, there should be a mathematician who literally has their own job.
Right. You stand next to the coach in the fourth quarter, and you just tell him what to do. This is what the odds say.
Time out.
I'd say take time out here. But that's never happened. I don't know. What are you looking forward to this week? I'm also in there's a million games I love this week, but go ahead.
Yeah, I look at the Sunday night game. Seattle and New England. It's weird because normally I look at like a divisional game or a real good interconference game. I want to see, like, I'm not as high on what the Pats did week one as other people. Like, they were fine, and defensively they were very good, but I expect them to be very good defensively. What are they when they have to go on the road here and play what I think is maybe the best team in the NFC? What are you getting then? Because to me, it's one thing beating the Dolphins at home. Fitzpatrick throws 3 picks. The Dolphins, they're not as good as New England. Like, to me, listen, fine and fair enough they won the game, but I want to see now, okay, Seattle comes in at home. Whether or not that matters, I guess we'll see, although it is cross-country, if anything at all. to me, look, Wilson was 31 of 35 in Atlanta. I get Atlanta doesn't have the best defense in the world, but still, that's talking. They got a lot of weapons, led by Metcalf, a second-year kid who's really a star. And one interesting note, okay, the Pats only threw for 155 yards, okay, against Miami. That was the lowest total in the NFL when you don't adjust for sacks. If I'm Seattle, who blitzed 34% of the time last week, which is ninth most in the league, I'm bringing more pressure this week. I'm coming after them. Keep a spy on Newton, probably Bobby Wagner. There's nobody who's better fit for that. You don't have to worry about a tight end. And I'd say, go ahead and beat me. You throw the ball. We're going to run blitz you all night. You throw the football. I am very curious to see if Newton can do that. If the Pats go in and win this game, I think that they are, I don't want to say for real because they're the Pats, have been for real for 20 years. They're dangerous. I think they're dangerous if they win this game. If they go out and they lose this game, then I say, okay, they're decent. They might be a playoff team, but I don't put them in that upper echelon.
I'm not going to say this is a bold prediction, even though I might make it my bold prediction, or also just adding a segment into the show that maybe we can add Carm's bet of the week, even though I never bet. Somehow the Patriots are being way overvalued in this game. Seattle is going to kill them, is what I see. I think the Seahawks are going to crush Cam Newton, Bill Belichick, and the New England Patriots. The Lions 3.5. I think they win by 2 touchdowns. That's my prediction on Sunday night. I'm looking forward to watching it, and I'll be pleasantly surprised, I guess, from an entertainment standpoint, if Cam can keep it close. But I'm expecting this to not go well for New England.
Well, I'll give you real quick the other game I'm very excited to watch. And like you said, I think it's a pretty good week of games. Rams at Eagles. Rams played well week one. Dallas, as you mentioned, they made some mistakes. A ticky-tack interference call at the end on Gallup cost them a shot there to at least tie the game, send it to overtime. But here's what I'm watching in this game. Aaron Donald is the best defensive tackle I've ever seen in my life. Now, you could start talking old school, Mean Joe Green, Bob Lilly, so on and so forth, but in my lifetime, he's the best defensive tackle I've ever seen. The Eagles allowed 8 sacks against Washington. They only ran for 3 first downs. The line was awful. Lane Johnson, we'll see if he's back for this game. Can they block them? Can they block them at all? And here's the other thing. The Rams in week one had the shortest depth of target of any team in the NFL. They only averaged throwing the ball 4 yards in the air per attempt, but they ranked 3rd in net yards per attempt, 8.4, which means they were getting the ball out quick and guys were making plays after the catch. Can the Eagles tackle them and make their plays? If they can, I think they lose this game. The Eagles have got to be much better both sides of the ball.
Here's my bold pick of the week. It was ugly in week one as we're talking about New England and Miami, but the Fitz magic is going to be back at home.
Oh.
And the Buffalo Bills are going to go down. Miami's going to get a win, and both New England and Buffalo is going to be 1-1 after week two, after New England gets smoked out west. And Miami takes care of business with the magic back. That is, I'm riding the Dolphins on a bounce back week for Fitzmagic. He's getting one more nod in week two. I think he knows his season's on the line. I think he'll dial up the magic.
My bold prediction for the week is that Pittsburgh shuts out Denver.
Oh God, I'd hate that.
Here's why. Okay, Denver could not do anything against Tennessee. I understand they moved the ball a little bit. They scored 14 points. And they did not look good doing it. They had they got locked on a lot of these rollout one read plays, and to his credit, he executed them. But when he had to really stay in there, get to a second and third read, make throws in the tight windows, he was somewhat pedestrian. It wasn't bad necessarily. It wasn't bad, but it was average. Average ain't gonna play at Heinz Field this weekend. Saquon Barkley is, in my opinion, the best running back in football. Ran for 6 yards on 15 carries. 6 yards. That's nuts. You factor in, Philip Lindsay's got turf, though. He's probably going to be out for this game. Their offensive line is not good. Garrett Bowles is terrible. The Steelers have, in my opinion, the best front 4 in the AFC. Okay, they're going to bring a lot of pressure. My prediction is Pittsburgh wins big and that they shut them out.
Love it. All right, into the future we go. And we're going to start with the Bills and the Pats as we continue to look at the AFC East. Who is the favorite after we had the week one inspection? Buffalo, of course, being the Jets, and New England taking care of Miami. I think you're going. I'm a little surprised you're going with the Bills here, Matt. You're buying Buffalo.
I am. Well, I'm buying the roster. I think they're really good offensively and defensively in terms of their talent level. Josh Allen does scare me. I know Bills Mafia, they'll come after you for saying that. But I'm willing to take that heat. I don't care what anyone wants to say. You go back and watch that game. He made some nice plays. He also had two ridiculously bad fumbles. Like, that stuff, people overlook that in wins because it just, oh, well, what the hell? It didn't matter. It matters when you play good teams. He does that against good teams. They're losing. But that all said, I love the roster. I love the coaching staff. I do think they're a double-digit win team, 10, 11 wins right there. New England, I love the defense to an extent. But when they play good teams, we're going to see a Sunday night, they can't get a pass rush without blitzing. And against good quarterbacks, you're going to get housed doing that. You are eventually going to pay the price. Newton was fine. He was great on the ground. He's not going to be able to run the ball 15 times a week. And to me, he's going to have to sit in there and throw it. Other than Julian Edelman, who is he throwing to? Only five guys caught balls in New England last weekend, three of which I swear you've never even heard of. And then you had five to N'Keal Harry for 38 yards and five to Edelman. That is not going to play. I like Buffalo in the AFC East, at least right now. We'll see how things progress.
So, all right, let me throw some stats at you here, Vertoran, because I'm diving deep into the Patriots' run attack, which, by the way, they ran it 65% of the time, not just 15 runs for Cam. It was ground, 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 ground. But what do you like about this from the NFL Next Gen stats? Newton running the ball 19 miles per hour on two runs, Matt Vertoran, the highest mark in the last 4 years. So he's still got some speed going on here. For, you know, they write for context, a quarterback reaching 19 miles per hour happened three other times across the NFL in week one. So he's in the upper echelon. The 11-yard touchdown run, 19.2, fastest touchdown run in the past.
How do you make a radio ad for an 8K TV that conveys the feeling of 33 million pixels with over a billion shades of color hitting your eyeballs? This is the best we can do. Samsung Neo QLED 8K. Unreasonably good.
Five seasons, and his the average maximum speed was 12.4 miles per hour. My point being that there's, as we saw in the offseason, when he was doing workouts at midnight from wherever the hell he was, Cam's still got something going on here. So
I think Cam's good. The problem is they have nobody around him. That's my problem.
No, I get it.
Nice research by you, Carl. But I've
always loved Next Gen stats, man.
They are. They're very good. I know you're a big fan. I just look at them and say, when they play good teams that can take the run game away from them or at least limit them, who is he throwing to? They have nobody. That is what the concern is. I don't see them being able to throw the ball very effectively this year.
At the end of the day, I think I'm coming with you on Buffalo, but I'm very interested to see if this would be, let's put it this way, if New England wins the division this year, it would be one of Belichick's greatest coaching jobs.
No question. Yes. Yeah.
So I find the whole thing fascinating. All right, Joe Burrow or Baker Mayfield going forward. We're talking about just this year, Matt. How are we looking at this one?
Well, we're talking just
in the rest of time.
Oh my god. This year and beyond. Like just moving forward.
You still put Baker in that conversation? Really? I have no faith in
Mayfield or Burrow, who's gonna have the better year? And actually, who's going to have the better career? Better career.
So
who's in the better career, Baker Mayfield or Joe Burrow?
I mean, to me, that I would bet like Mitchell Trubisky has a better career than Baker Mayfield. I have no faith in Mayfield left. So I would buy Burrow just by default. And I like Joe Burrow. But what are you seeing in Baker that gives you some confidence that he can be in the conversation even? I think you're going with Burrow, but what are you seeing in Baker?
Well, so he had a really good rookie season. And even though it feels like a lifetime ago, that was like 17 games ago. So you could argue in the NFL, it is a lifetime.
He did.
He played very well as a rookie. And then they put a lot more talent around him. And last offseason, he spent the entire time doing a GQ article and running his mouth on social media and it came back and bit him in the ass, and he stunk. And look, that's not the only reason he stunk. They stunk also because Freddie Kitchens is basically like you and me coaching that team. But this year, like I got – here's where I'm at with Mayfield. First game of the year. I watched that game live. I watched Baltimore-Cleveland, at least the first like 2.5 quarters before it got completely out of hand. Then I went back and watched the rest of it later on, I believe, Monday night. Mayfield had time to throw the ball. And I want to give – I think it was in Next Gen Stats, actually. I did see this. He had the third most time of any quarterback in the league in terms of on average. He had 3 seconds on average per dropback to throw the ball. And he still couldn't do anything. He threw 189 yards, barely completed half his throws, threw a hideous pick. At some point, you've got to just be better. I don't care who the coach is. I don't care about, well, we didn't have an offseason. Nobody did. Who cares? Like, Lamar Jackson didn't have an offseason. He looked great. I don't care that you didn't have an offseason. None of it matters. You ran the ball. They ran the ball for over 5 yards a carry against Baltimore. So it wasn't like they were all on him all the time. He stunk. I watched every drive of his. He was terrible in the game. So I am taking Burrow because I just look at Mayfield and say, at some point, you've got to complete passes. Last year, he was under 60%. This year, he starts out terribly. Too many picks. Okay. Not enough ability to read past the first read. And if you play combo coverage, he's a disaster. Burrow, I watched that game in its entirety as well live. Yes, he missed some wide open throws, but to me, those will come. He will make those throws. He made the plays to me that most kids don't make. Stood in the pocket, took shots, was able to deliver the ball on time and in traffic. You know, led them down the field when they needed to be led down the field. Now, they don't make the kick, but that's not on him. I like Burrow a lot. I would take Burrow significantly here moving forward. I think Mayfield's got talent, but either the work's not getting put in on the back end, which I don't know that to be true. I'm just saying either that's the case, which is why he's not progressing, or he just the rookie year was somewhat of a mirage, and he's simply not as good as we were led to believe.
Look, his mechanics borderline stink if they don't just flat out stink. If we're looking for some excuses for him. I mean, you're talking about 4 different head coaches now in young Baker's career, so perhaps you can give him a break on that. But sure. You know, the guy's got more commercials than he has career victories. I mean, you know, so I'm out. It was interesting what Dez Bryant said about him. Baker Mayfield, I like Baker Mayfield, but you have to play Case Keenum so he can learn how to run an offense with talent. If Keenum plays, it'll be the Houston Cougars in Minnesota all over again. So I look, there's a lot of talk going on Baker right now, and I think all of it's worthy. Like maybe it's the mouth that's bothering me so much with him. And like last year in the tunnel when he was yelling at a fan, that was it for me. All right, you're never gonna learn. You're always gonna be this guy who thinks he can say anything whenever. Professionalism doesn't matter. I'm Baker Mayfield. I can do whatever I want. It doesn't work that way. At least I don't, unless you're supremely over the top, preposterously talented, successful on the NFL level, and he hasn't been that. All right. So Burrow, do me solid. I think what Joe Burrow is going to be able to do for Cincinnati is going to be huge. But only time will tell, I guess. Let's look at some teams perhaps in some trouble here. The Broncos and the Texans, Matt. Who do you think is actually in more trouble between those two? That could be a tight race.
I think it's Houston, because Houston's next 3 games, including obviously this week, home to Baltimore, at Pittsburgh, home to Minnesota. They're exceedingly fortunate if they win one of those games. And the coach is just a disaster. An abject, absolute disaster. And even if he was a great coach, they might be 1-3 in these games, but I have no faith they're going to win the games they're always supposed to win, because they always seem to blow games they shouldn't blow. That said, I think they're both in real trouble, because Denver's schedule going forward, they're also at Pittsburgh this weekend, and the next week they host the Tom Brady-led Buccaneers. They could be staring at 0-3 real quick too. So I think they're both in a lot of trouble. And you know, that's the funny thing, to make a broader point about the NFL, and obviously you know this, anyone listening knows this, but you know, baseball, you know, we watch 162 games typically, and you can have a bad month, and you can adjust, you can get past it. Man, in football, a 2-game losing streak is like a 5-alarm fire. It's just such a big deal, and especially early, man, you fall behind. Now it starts to snowball. If you have a couple of injuries, you know, it's even worse. I look at Denver and Houston and say both those teams are incredibly fortunate if they're not both 0-3. And if you're 0-3, like just to get in the wild card, even with the 7th team now making the playoffs, I mean, you're probably going to have to go 9-4 the rest of the way. Like, it's not impossible, but that's rough sledding, especially the Denver. My God, they're still going to play the Chiefs twice. They still got to play the Raiders twice. Maybe they split those games.
Yeah.
They got to play New England. It's a lot. You're asking a lot. They got to play the Saints. It's tough.
Well, that's why I think it's hands down Denver. First of all, like, even as bad as this year, I think, is going to go for Houston, ultimately you do have Deshaun Watson. So as long as you don't kill him, which they might, but as long as he doesn't get injured, then you have that building block. I thought Drew Lock looked okay week one. This hurts me because I fell in love with Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator in Chicago. I've been rooting for – I just wanted him to do well. And clearly he is showing warts as a guy who's never been a head coach. The clock management was abysmal and just, like, baffling in week one. So I feel bad for Fangio, not necessarily so much for the Broncos. But, that you needed to win week one. Yeah, Tennessee was a win you had to have, and they should have
missed four kicks.
Right, you should have.
Come on,
you should have won the game going away, or at least eked it out, and you didn't. So I think it's the Broncos. Do you think Brady has a bounce back week this week versus Carolina?
Yeah, I think Brady's going to look like he's 25 this week because Carolina can't stop anybody. The defense is not good, and if you need evidence that they're not good, they used every single draft pick they had on defense. Okay, and they have obviously no Luke Kuechly, who's retired. Thomas Davis, long gone. Charles Davis, good broadcaster. Thomas Davis, long gone. They lose Bradbury off the corner spot this offseason in free agency. Man, that's a lot. That's a lot. And now all of a sudden, you're asking them to go in and stop Tampa in a game that Tampa's got to win. Let's be real, got to win this game. I think it's a lot to ask for out of Carolina. And look, just to put a cherry on this. The Panthers tackling against the Raiders, who are not more talented than the Bucs, was not good. They missed 16 tackles last week. Only the Jets missed more in week one. So Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, they got to be healthy. And Godwin's in concussion protocol, and Evans is dealing with the hamstring. But if they're healthy, I think they put up huge numbers this week.
Those two are huge issues. But I just think the Bucs narrative has kind of jumped the track here.
It has.
Look. They were playing the Saints in week one. No one thought they were going to win that football game or should have thought they were going to win that football game. Their schedule gets a lot easier now. They should win this week. Then they're playing at Denver. Then you got the Chargers. Then you have the Bears. A lot of winnable games. A tough game with Green Bay. But then the Raiders and the Giants. So, look, there's a lot of winnable games on that Bucs schedule. Week one was not one of them. In the game. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, all I was going to say is they had the misfortune of that game being week one. If that game's week seven, nobody cares. I mean,
right.
it's a blip. See, that's the danger in week one reaction. That's why, you know, hopefully we're being smart here. But there is – people go crazy. Like, what you see week one is what you're going to see all 16 games. That is just anything but the case. You're going to have – Tampa Bay is going to be fine. Brady's at least going to be good. Like, Tom Brady didn't forget overnight how to play football. He's going to be fine. He's going to be a good quarterback. Sure.
Yeah. I stick with he threw a lot of good balls in that game. There's something left in the tank. Let's do our in or out. We're starting with Los Angeles, the Chargers, and we're wondering if will they go to Justin Herbert. The Chargers go to Justin Herbert, I should say, before November. In or out that he'll start before November. I'll go with this one first, Burnham. I'm 1,000% in. I don't think they're going to be in contention. I think there's going to be no reason to not give him a chance to develop here in year one. What do you think?
I'm out. I'm actually out.
Interesting.
Because here's an unscientific point. During training camp, okay, Burrow's a difference. We knew he was going to be the starter. They got rid of Dalton and everything else. Tua is behind a reasonable quarterback in Fitzpatrick. And you heard a lot about him the entire offseason. Oh, he looks great. He's playing really well. He's moving around really well. You've not heard one word about Justin Herbert. literally nothing. And the man was on Hard Knocks, and you heard nothing about him. That worries me. If he was playing really well, you'd hear it out of L.A. You would. We all know how NFL teams and how pro teams in general work. That if they want to get a message out, they get it out. They'll leak it through some beat guys, leak it over the radio. They will get the message out. Herbert, you didn't hear anything out of Justin Herbert. Nothing. And I look at Taylor. Look, Taylor's not good. Okay, like I said, I do those quarterback ranks every Tuesday. I ranked him dead last. He threw for 6.9 yards an attempt. He completed 53% of his throws. So he's checking down and completing half of them. It's not great. Like that's, you're not going to win games against any decent team doing it. Let's be real. They should have lost to the Bengals. Like the Bengals missed a million opportunities in that game, and if Bullock doesn't pull a hammy while he's kicking the field goal, they at least go to overtime. So I think Taylor's going to play out the year despite that he's not that good, or at least will play maybe right to the very end, kind of like where Locke came in for five games last year, something like that. I think Taylor's in there for the long haul because I just don't think they have faith in Burrow yet to come out and play.
That would be – if that's how it goes, then I would start betting that you absolutely blew the draft pick. If Taylor continues to play like he plays – and he's fine as a backup, by the way. I don't mind him.
Yes, he's a very good backup.
Okay. I mean, if that's the case, then the Chargers very much might have reached for a quarterback, which a lot of people thought they were doing at the time. Let's bring in the Washington football team, and let's ask in or out. Washington makes a playoff push behind their defense, led by my guy Chico Ron Rivera. What do you think?
I'm out, but I love Rivera and the job that he's doing and what a gutsy job it is. He's getting an IV during halftime for his chemo treatment, and he's coaching that team to a comeback win. I mean, God bless him. My problem with the football team is they're going to be good defensively. And we actually haven't talked about this. I certainly know I wrote about it a few times. That front seven is packed with guys. Okay, Chase Young looked terrific, sack and a half in his debut, Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen, De'Ron Payne, Ryan Kerrigan, they're all first-rounders. Like, that's a lot of guys who can play up front. The problem is going to be I don't trust the quarterback, and I don't trust that offense.
Progressive presents today's to-do list for your dog.
Check front door. Check window. Check other window. Rest chin on ground. Look into distance. Bark for no reason. Check front door. Check window. Check other window.
Your pet has a very busy schedule, so it's up to you to make sure they're protected. That's why Progressive Car Insurance covers your pets for up to $1,000 if they're ever in a car accident with you.
Chase shiny ball, lose shiny ball. Find shiny ball, eat shiny ball.
Get coverage for your pets with any auto policy from Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage for cats and dogs included with a purchase of collision coverage and subject to policy terms.
At all. They ranked at the bottom offensively in a lot of different categories. Haskins, .178, completed about 55% of his throws. 5.7 yards per attempt. That's not going to cut it. The football team won because they got turnovers, and they're going to get some turnovers with that defense. But I don't see them making a playoff push. I think they're about a 6-win team. I think they're improved, and I think next year, if they can get better play out of the quarterback here as we go along, I think next year they're interesting. I like the direction they're headed. I just don't think this year is going to be that year.
Well, let me ask you the question then, because I'm trying to figure this one out. Who do you trust in the NFC East right now? Now, granted, this feels like a huge week one overreaction, but Washington's got a division win. Granted, it was at home. I don't know if that matters or not, but I'll just state it.
It's a good win.
Cowboys didn't look great. Maybe that's your number one. And the Giants, I think we're a long way from believing in the Giants. So
the Giants stink.
Right. So who in that division do you look at that's going to keep the – if you're talking about a playoff push, I think I got to be in here.
I'm the dope that picked the Eagles to be the best team in the division. So
maybe
I guess
they will be.
I was going to say, by proxy, I guess I have to say them. But I'll stick with the Eagles. I think the Eagles, even though they play like crap week one, I'll stick with the Eagles. I think Dallas and or Philly gets in 9 wins, and I think that's just too rich for Washington.
All right, I'm jumping on the Washington football team bandwagon. I didn't think I'd be saying that this year, but after 1 win, I'm in, baby. You will make a quote-unquote playoff push by winning 7 games, and that'll be enough to keep things interesting in the NFC East. Let's get the Rams in here. Do the Rams bounce back and contend this season, in or out?
I'm out. I think they could contend for a playoff spot, because if there were seven teams last year that made the playoffs, they would have made the playoffs. I don't think they'll contend for a Super Bowl. Goff, to me, is above average, but not elite. They don't have any weapons that really scare you. Kupp and Woods are good, nice players. They're not top 10 guys at their position. The offensive line is so-so. Defensively, Donald is absolutely absurd. He's the best player in the game. I don't love the rest of that defense. Ramsey, to me, is a very good player, but you know, people act like he's Deion Sanders. If you watch the games, he is not that. He's good. I don't even think he's one of the top three cornerbacks in the league, though. Like I would definitely take Gilmore over him. I'd take Tre'Davious White over him. And I'd argue one of the Baltimore guys are better, whether it's Humphrey or Peters. Now, that's still – you're still a damn good player, top five. But I think they're about a 9, maybe a 10-win team, which is, by the way, a little better than I felt about them coming into the year. I thought they'd be about 500. I think they're a borderline playoff team in a very good conference. I do not put them with Seattle, New Orleans, Green Bay, so on and so forth.
So just for sheer karma reasons – and somebody's going to get mad at me for this one. Hey, Sean McVay, can you actually put your mask on? Or actually, the way I would go about this too is like, look, if everybody's getting tested and you're doing all your protocols, why does anybody have to wear a mask once you're on the field?
I'm glad you said that. And I'll let you. Why is anyone wearing a mask? You're all testing negative. You're all in the same, like, there's nobody there. I look, we've talked about this. I'm all for, like, look, protocol. Be safe, be smart. You're all testing negative. It's like wearing a mask in the car. You don't need a damn mask in the car. It's just you. I don't understand it.
The mask in the car person is my favorite thing. Like, I want to knock on their window. What are you doing? Are you worried about a fly in the back seat that you think you're going to give the virus to? And believe me, I'm all for safety. Take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. But why are you driving by yourself in a car and you're wearing a mask? Do you just forget that it's on? Is that what the deal is? Like, you're just so used to having it on? That's the only viable explanation I can have.
It's very odd. Andy Reid's in like a welder's mask. Like, during the game, it's raining. You can't see. I just don't understand. You've all tested negative. Nobody has it. Just go out there and play.
So that it does make me wonder, like, maybe they're not actually doing the testing that often, and Andy, like, knows it, and he's way more knowledgeable about what's happening than any of us, and we just think they're doing this great testing. And Reed also knows that he's in terrible health and could, you know, keel over at any moment from something else other than COVID, so he's going to do his best to, you know, keep things safe.
Dare put that on Andy Reid.
I don't mean to do that to you, Mr. Chief. And by the way, I did my very best today to talk to Willie Lanier, Chief, well, NFL Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, class act. Willie's landline didn't work well. His cell phone didn't work well. The conference line didn't work well. But in between the intermittent talking to Willie Lanier, what a class act, Murder Ram. I want to let you know that.
Well, I will tell you this. I've interviewed Willie Lanier years ago for a long form I wrote on the 69 Chiefs and their defense. Willie Lanier is one of the nicest, most intelligent human beings I've ever spoken to.
Yep.
I got off the call and I was like, God, I am maybe a tenth of as intelligent as he is. I mean, he would talk about somebody who really just is one of the more intellectual human beings you could ever come across, and not only just in sports, in general. I mean, what a wonderful person to deal with. No, Willie Lanier, absolute class act. And I'll give you a funny story about Willie Lanier, okay, for the listeners. So 1969, they're playing in a playoff game. They're at Chase Stadium. And they are winning 6-3 in the fourth quarter. The Jets have first and goal at the 1-yard line. Willie Lanier is part of two of the big plays on the goal line. It's the biggest goal line stand in Chiefs history. They hold the Jets to an 8-yard field goal, and the goal line was still adorned with the uprights.
I know he screamed at him, like, we're not letting him in, right?
He did. But the best part of it, I asked him about it, and he said to me, I just kept jumping the snap count because I figured if I'm off sides, who cares? He was like, I was just going to try to time it because if I'm off sides, what do we lose, an inch? He was like, I'm just going to keep – and he said that was a big key to that goal line stand, was they're getting such a jump off the line because they just figured the hell with it. If we jump off sides, it doesn't matter. The greatest goal line stand in Chiefs history, they held them. Jets kick a field goal. Chiefs go down and score a touchdown on the next drive, to Gloucester Richardson, and off they go. But William Lanier, great player, better person.
African-American gentleman playing middle linebacker at that time was not normal either.
First ever, and he went to the Hall of Fame. Not bad.
God bless him. All right, let's wrap up in our in or out with Baltimore or Pittsburgh. I don't know how we got on William Lanier, but I'm glad that we did. Baltimore or Pittsburgh, the AFC North favorite, in or out?
I guess we should say, is Pittsburgh the AFC North?
Okay, I was wondering if you were – okay, so is Pittsburgh the
– I will say they are, because I picked them to win the division. I am – like, that defense is no joke. And I get it. People in Baltimore be screaming they have a great defense too. They do. But those two teams are going to play each other twice. You know why I picked Pittsburgh to win? Because I picked them to sweep them. Because nobody is running on that team. Nobody. Those Steelers defenses of yesteryear, and I'm not even going all the way back to like Lambert and Ham. And I'm talking like Harrison and Woodley and Farrier and Casey Hampton and Polamalu, right, and Ryan Clark. You just could not run the ball on those teams. And they'd force you to throw, and they'd get pressure without blitzing, or they'd bring the zone blitz that Dick LeBeau is so famous for, and they'd kill you. Now, Jackson's good enough, certainly, to beat the blitz and occasionally make some runs out of that structure, even with that great front facing him. But I like Pittsburgh, man. I've liked them all summer. I think the Steelers are really, really good. I think Baltimore's terrific as well. I think both those teams could win 12 games. Like, I think it's a great battle. But I like Pittsburgh in the head-to-head, and that's why I'll take them.
It's a, you have had this Steelers conviction for months now, seemingly. I'm out. Baltimore looked great in week one. I'll ride with the Ravens to do it again this year as far as be there right with Kansas City. But I don't feel like over the top about it. Maybe because I'm listening to Matt Verderame so much in my life that I'm starting to feel some Steeler fear in my heart. But I will be out with this, and Baltimore's going to continue to be what they've been the last year plus now. We're going to against the spread here as we finally get some bets in here. And we're starting out with my Bears, who are at home. They're a 5-point favorite with the New York Giants.
I see the floor to you. Thoughts?
Thoughts. Well, I think it's really interesting that the Bears might have blown it with Robert Quinn, who they gave $30 million guaranteed to. He misses week one. I don't know if he's going to be on the field in week two. The guy had double-digit sacks one time in the last 5 years. And if that guy's not impacting the defense, something's missing on the defensive side of the ball for the Bears right now. They have not looked anywhere close to what they looked like in 2018. Khalil Mack is maybe he's hurt and just tough guy not hearing about it. So it worries me that they're giving up as many points as they are giving up against the Lions team, by the way, that did not play great. Stafford did not have a great game, and they were still able to put up 23 on them. But and 5 points feels like a lot of points. I'll take the Giants. I think the Bears win, but I think five feels like a little bit strong for this Bears team.
We're in the same boat. Bears win, Giants cover. So here's my issue with the Bears beyond Trubisky, because we've covered that ad nauseum. They only converted 18% of their third down opportunities against Detroit. Detroit is not good. Like, it's not like you're going against a steel curtain there. Like, 18% is not great. So I think the Giants, despite also having a bad defense, are going to be able to get off the field a little bit here. I think they're going to be able to force some punts. The reason I think the Bears win is because the Giants turn the ball over. I actually like Daniel Jones quite a bit, but he's under constant pressure. They can't block anybody. The Bears can get a rush. And if you look at it, look, he threw two picks against the Steelers. One was not his fault. One was a hideous throw that got picked off in the end zone. He fumbled 18 times last year. Ouch. I think that's their undoing. That, to me, is the undoing. I think the Bears win this game something like 16-13. It's ugly. It's bad. It's 2-0 for the Bears. And look out for the Trubisky backers who are going to say that he now belongs in Canton.
Bear down. All right, let's go to the Chiefs. 9-point favorite, which is a bunch, but maybe not for the Chiefs, going up against the Chargers on the road here. What do we got?
So, Chiefs, I think, win. I will take the Chargers to cover. I think it's about a touchdown game. That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points. And I know the road may not really matter as much. This is the first time she's going to go on the road in this environment and get used to it. The Chargers can play defense. They have a good defense. And Derwin James isn't there. But last year, they held the Chiefs in the 20s twice. They are a problem against Kansas City because they sit back. They're aggressive up front. But that secondary, they can mix and match. They've got good corners. Hayward, Harris, King. I worry if you're, you know, from a Chiefs perspective, that you're going to move the ball, but it's going to be slowly. It's going to be somewhat plodding, at least by their standards. I think you ask a lot for Kansas City to win that game by more than a touchdown. I think it's, you know, I think the Chiefs, it's one of those games they're going to control, but you always just kind of feel like, okay, you know, the Chargers are at least hanging around. I mean, the scores last year were 24-17, and the Chiefs did score 31 the second time at home, week 17. I had the score, you know, 27-20. I wouldn't be shocked if the Chiefs covered. The one thing with the Chiefs, they got pressure on Deshaun Watson 60% of the time. Nobody else got pressure 34% of the time week one. That is absurd. If they do that again, they'll cover. They'll win by two touchdowns. But I'll take a slight cover by the Chargers. Chiefs win the game fairly easily.
Just to get our guy Willie Lanier on here one more time, he screamed at me this morning. Like, I'm like, what about Patrick Mahomes? It's a lock. They're going to repeat. He's like, dude, D4 lined up offsides. They didn't. They ended up losing the football game. Yep. It takes a team. He's just one dude. I'm like, yeah, but he's a really good dude. He's like, don't kid yourself. You need a whole football team. So – but that being said, I'm taking the Chiefs to cover until they don't this year. So they're 1-0 on that one. I'm going for 2-0 this week. And I think they come out of week one motivated to play a whole lot better. I didn't think they played particularly well, and they still got it done fairly easily. All right, Patriots and Seahawks. Seahawks are a 4-point favorite. I already weighed in on this one. I've got Seattle killing New England, and the spread when we started the show is at 3.5, and I guess it's moved to 4. So, Matt Verderam, where are you going?
Seattle to cover and win. I think Seattle covers. I don't know that I think they kill them like you do. I think they win by 7-10. I think they win again, kind of like Kansas City, comfortably. I don't think it's a massacre. I don't think it's a blowout. I think the Chiefs have a much bigger chance to blow the Chargers out than the Seahawks do the pass, just because it's Belichick. They're a well-coached team. They're good defensively. They'll hang in the game. You know, Seattle has this tendency with Wilson to be conservative. They weren't week one. We'll see if they stick to their guns or if they kind of revert back a little bit. I like Seattle by 7-10. Seattle's really good at home. I know this is a weird year, but that's still a cross-country trip for the Pats. Again, much like the Chiefs, first game on the road in this COVID environment.
How do you make a radio ad for an 8K TV that conveys the feeling of 33 million pixels with over a billion shades of color hitting your eyeballs? This is the best we can do. Samsung Neo QLED 8K, unreasonably good.
I think Seattle wins by, like I said, 7-10 points.
I feel comfortable saying New England will beat bad teams or below average teams like Miami. Beating a good team, I'm not there yet. So that's another wait and see reason of why I feel Seattle's going to crush them, which now I'm starting to feel that twinge in my body like I am the public and you should fade me and fade everybody else who's doing it because that's how the NFL works. But we shall see. All right, Saints are a 6-point favorite playing those Las Vegas Raiders. This feels – I'm taking the Raiders here, Matt. Little home – let's go for a stunner. I didn't think New Orleans looked very good at all. I'm willing to bet on an upstart Raiders football team to at least cover the 6 here, if not win the game out. Where are you going?
So I was going to pick the Saints to cover, and then it came out that Michael Thomas is going to miss several weeks, and I got concerned. Because it's Emmanuel Sanders now on the outside and nobody. I mean, yes, Jared Cook's a fine tight end. Kamara, obviously, a very good running back. I think the Saints will win the game. I think the Raiders will cover the spread. The Saints have just too much firepower, even without Thomas. Here's the problem the Raiders have. They can't cover anybody. They just can't cover. I mean, Bridgewater was throwing the ball. He looked like Johnny Unitas in that game. There was no ability to cover. So even without Thomas, I think the Saints win. If they had Thomas, I would have picked them by two touchdowns. I'll take him in a game, you know, 3-4 points, something like that. It's Monday night. The Raiders will be jacked up. And I think the Raiders will move the ball a little bit as well. I just don't think they're good enough to deal with what New Orleans brings to the table. I think New Orleans wins it, pulls away late. Raiders get a garbage time TD and you know, cover that way.
Let's wrap up as we always do with our looking forward and what's going on in your life right now here, Matt Verderam. I know it's a busy time for you, buddy.
It is. I'm really just trying to keep my head above water here. A lot going on, a lot to do. Talked last week about the Queen getting her big girl bed. That was big stuff. She is killing me with that thing because now she's out of bed at 6:15 in the morning, slamming her door, screaming, turn on all the lights. she's going to the home if she doesn't stop. But other than that, I mean, really just living the dream, man. I'm just so pumped football's back. It was so cool to watch week one. No hitches, no hiccups. You got week two already starting tomorrow. That's the crazy thing about the NFL. I talk to my dad about this every year. The season starts. It's week one. You're like, man, got a whole football season ahead. It's crazy. You got this 4 month plus journey. You blink and it's week 10. And you're already looking at playoff races and who's doing what and who's got the big injuries this week. It's, man, there's nothing like football season. I'm jacked up about it. And I'm looking forward to seeing week two. There's a lot of games. Week two is great in a sense. All those 0-1 teams got that pressure now. You got to win this game. The 1-0 teams, and they're trying to get out in front. You get this win, you get the 2-0, you're in the driver's seat all of a sudden for a playoff spot. So I always like week two because it really starts to separate the teams a little bit.
So just to bring in another podcast that I am on, and by the way, I know there's going to be a Chiefs podcast that Matt Verderam is going to be doing. I don't know if we're breaking news on that one right here.
We are, apparently. We are. That's okay. That's fine. Go ahead. Talk.
So I had back-to-back this week, John Starks on Monday, followed by Shaquille O'Neal on Tuesday. That is a twofer that I never thought that I would get to do on back-to-back days. So it was quite the week. Starks is just – it was so fun to tell him that, you know, I hated you. and now, you know, I've got so much respect for how you competed. Everything about that guy, I freaking love him. And Shaq, we've had on a couple – times now because he's always promoting something, and he was great as always. Starks gave me more time. He was willing to talk pretty much all day. I let him go after 20 some odd minutes. Shaq, they were telling me to get off the phone with him, Carm, so that one was only 9 minutes. But anyway, it was fun to talk to those two guys. So if you want to check it out, it's on the Windy City with Mark Carmen.
And I will say, first of all, you should subscribe to that if you like listening to Carm here. You should definitely do it. I listen to that podcast because I love John Starks. John, I mean, obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm a Knicks fan. I grew up in New York. I don't like talking about it now. But I, in my office where I'm sitting right now, I have a John Starks, the dunk poster framed up. I've had it since I was a little kid. And listen, I'm open to admitting that it was not a dunk over Jordan. It was a dunk over Horace Grant. That's fine because it was. But I loved John. When I was a kid and he got traded to Golden State for Latrell Sprewell, I cried. I loved John Starks. He was my hero. I loved how tough he was. I loved how much of a fighter he was. I bought his autobiography, read it cover to cover. So I was very jealous of you that you got to interview John Starks. If I ever met John Starks, I'd be like a little kid again. He was my idol in terms of basketball growing up.
I said the same thing with I was talking to my buddy Steve Gruthy, his diehard Knicks fan, who's a basketball coach, he's a teacher now, whatever, and he's. He's like, dude, you have no idea. That's my favorite Nick. I mean, Pat was the best, but like, there's so much love for Stark. It's really cool.
Because he embodies New York. Like, tough, gritty, in your face, like everything. I mean, there was that game, and we'll cut it because I know we got to go, but there that 94 game against Indiana where he got thrown out for headbutting Miller. And like people in New York still like loved him for that because they hated Reggie. Like, every New Yorker in the world wanted to headbutt Reggie Miller, which, by the way, I met him years ago and I got to tell him how much I hated him. I was covering a March Madness thing and he was, of course, one of the broadcasters for Turner. And to his credit, he was in New York, he was in Midtown Manhattan. He busted out laughing. He's like, "You a Knicks fan?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." And he's like, "Yeah, how 26 points in the fourth quarter feel?" And he said it smiling, you know, and he hit me on the shoulder. I said, It hurt, but I'm guessing not as much as Game 7 hurt for you. Kind of like mutual, like, yeah, that really sucked. And we just both kind of parted ways. But ultimate respect for Reggie after that, man. But those are fun times.
It's underrated that you never really realized that one day you'd be able to tell those guys that you hated them, and everybody would kind of be able to laugh about it. It's fantastic. It's really awesome. Hey, everybody should be subscribing to this podcast and rating Stack in the Boxes. And we really thank you for listening today, as always. Back on it on Sunday night. I don't know if Matt's doing anything special. And the Chiefs podcast alongside Patrick Allen is coming. So whenever that's out, we, of course, will promote it over here as well. But looking forward to you doing that, because I think you know a little something about those Kansas City Chiefs and have a little bit of fire in your belly about that team. So I think it's going
to
be awesome.
I got tapped to do it. It's an honor. Patrick Allen and I will be doing it, the Arrowhead Addict Chiefs podcast. We are breaking news on that. We haven't even announced it yet, but we are doing it. I'll be doing it twice a week. We're excited. I don't want to say exactly when it's going to start, but it is going to start very, very soon. I don't want to get the exact day out because we're still nailing that down. But yes, it's going to be out. It's going to be exciting. I'm going to tweet about it and promote it like crazy. We'll still be doing this podcast, of course. So don't worry about that. I'll just be doing both of them. And we will have a lot of fun. So you'll get the national stuff here, and you'll get me with just the Chiefs, which, of course, is my roots, both as a fan and as a professional covering the team. So that will be fun. But thank you for listening to this version of Stack in the Box. Thanks for subscribing. If you haven't already, please do. Leave a rating, leave a comment. We love you. And we'll be talking to you again Sunday night after week 2 of the NFL season wraps up.
Underdog Fantasy is the fastest growing fantasy app and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Just jump on underdogfantasy.com or download the app, draft your team, and that's it. And if drafts aren't your thing, they also have a pick'em game where you can win 20 times your money in a single night. Use promo code RADIO and Underdog will double your first deposit when you sign up with up to $100 in bonus cash. Deposit $100, get $100 free. That's promo code RADIO. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.